The point that I wanted to make about the Medrash is that Bilam and the whole idea of Moav is not the nisayon that Moav represents in terms of the availability or the sexuality of Moav and their enticements, and we look at Avodah Zarah not as a culture or as a religious heritage or as a point of view, but rather simply as the nisayon of an alien society which lacks the morality, lacks the strictures and the stringencies of a holy, a sacred way of life. So it's always written in the language of us versus them, meaning the Yetzirah. In other words, what would attract us to them is our Yetzirah. What attracts us to them is our baser instincts. What would attract us to them is our lack of the higher moral code, the higher moral sensitivities. And I think that that is true, and it may even be true in terms of our perspective as far as Moav is concerned, in terms of the enticements of Moav. Ayochala am liznos bivnos Moav. It also fits in very well with the idea of bochel mishpachosav, that aliske mishpacha, that the desire of Bnei Yisrael to be free and unfettered is a desire to drop the yoke of Ol Malchus Shamayim. It's a desire to limit the amount of imposition that is upon us in favor of Hefkeros. So Hefkeros isn't a culture or a value. And the same thing is true about encountering the licentiousness of a society, the moral depravities of society. There is something in the human being that says, I'm a behema, and I want to be a behema. I enjoy being a behema. So behemas do certain things. You know, they eat certain things. They fornicate. They don't draw lines. They simply find something that's attractive to them, and they go after it. That's part of their instinctual and habitual things. And the same thing as the Vilna Gaon differentiates between a higher level nisayon called kavod and the basic instinct, lower level nisayon called taiva. Chemda and taiva, he considers them to be two separate things entirely. And taiva is something that we share with behemoths, the taiva that you can satisfy, at least for the moment, and then it comes back and rears its head again a little bit later. But there is chemda. Chemda is the desire for power, for authority, for kavod, for money. And I always point out that kavod and power go hand in hand with money. Because after a certain point, when you no longer need the money, why are you still striving for it? The answer is because it gives you power, or the answer is because it gives you kavod, and they're one and the same anyhow. So even that higher instinct, even that higher, which animals don't share, but nevertheless, it is a Yetzer Hara, and you can brand it as wrong. You can brand it as something that is really not appropriate in almost any society. You know, when someone says that power corrupts, and a lot of power, great power, corrupts greatly, he doesn't have to be Jewish and he doesn't have to be frum to be able to make a comment like that, and it should be universally understood, because this is part of the human condition. So the human is a behema on a higher level also. He's not only a behema like every behema, he's also a behema on a higher level. Again, there's this desire to be unfettered and not to be controlled. But that's not what Bilam meant in this medrash. And that's what I find so incredibly remarkable about what this medrash is trying to say. The Matoivu is not a statement, this is the way people are, and don't fool yourself into thinking that you'll be able to overcome your Yetzirah. That's not Matovu. In fact, Lehefech, in the same way that we understand after the bracha is given, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that that's the only bracha that prevailed, is that Matovu Alecha Yaakov is Shlohoyu Pischei Mechuvano Zelazed, that they're not giving each other an Ein Hara, and that there's a Tznius that prevails. In the same way, Matovu is used by Bilam, meaning, in other words, this is a value. This is important because it's not a taiva. It's a taiva that's legislated into a value. It's a principle. Now, for example, there's a lot of discussion about making Yiddishkeit easier for women. And there are people from time to time that make the point that im kein ein l'dava sof, because fundamentally Yiddishkeit is very misogynistic. Because if you think of a patriarchal society as misogynistic, if that's the definition of misogyny, then you're saying that I prefer a shita, a hashkafas olam, a higher level humanity that is not based on the Yetzer Hara, but on the contrast, to fight the Yetzer Hara to be achieved, which is a matovu o'alecha, where everybody is shaveh b'shaveh, where there is no gender distinctions whatsoever, and where who and he no longer exist in the Chumash, and where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can no longer be perceived in male terms exclusively. Either he has to be perceived 50% of the time in female terms, or take away the male and female entirely and speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the abstract and altogether. And the same is true with Kiyikach Yesh Isha, and the same is true with Gittin, and the same is true with just about every other halacha. When the Rambam says at the end of Hilchas Sota that a person is mechuyev to be pokeid, he's not saying a person is mechuyev to be pokeid the other people of his household, or that just as a man is mechuyev to be pokeid the men of his household, the woman is mechuyev to be pokeid as the women of her household, or that in the same way that a man is mechuyev to worry about the moral and religious component of his family, so too a woman is mechuyev to be equally responsible for the religious component of her family. And maybe from time to time mention the woman first, so there should be no havamina that the men have any objectively superior status. And that's going to rewrite the entire Torah, Chamishachum Shei Torah, the entire Tanakh. You're going to say that all of that is historical if you don't want to change the Nusach, but it's no longer relevant to today. And now we have to have, if we would be writing the Torah today, if the Torah would be given today, it would be given in an entirely different signon with an entirely different thrust. And all of the mitzvahs and all of the chiyuvim and all of the varieties of structures, which are all male-dominated, have to be changed, or to say that it was never any good, and that the whole idea of being a religious Jew is basically burying your head in the sand in favor of much more important and much more correct and much more legitimate, you know, socially, politically, and emotionally legitimate. You know, it's a better religion. The secular religion today is a better religion because it makes everybody equal. It gives everybody a chance. It does not allow for anyone to say that he's better than anybody else. And that kind of a totally democratic structure, which gives everyone equal opportunity, this is the ultimate religion of today in American society, for sure, in Western society. So that's matovu o'alecha moav. It means, in other words, I don't mean that moav had our values. Far from it. What I mean to say is that the words matovu identify what is superior as a culture, as a cultural value. Moav is right. Yiddishkeit is wrong. Rome is right. Greek thinking, Greek philosophy, Greek values are right. And I think that a lot of the Misyavnim were mercenary in the sense that they once asked one of the secular Russian Jews who had shmad himself and became a Russian Christian. They asked him, did you do this out of a desire for being accepted, for power, for prominence, for all sorts of ulterior reasons, or was this an objective evaluation? He says it was an objective evaluation that it was worth his while for ulterior reasons. So there are a lot of people like that want to be with the program because it's worth their while. They don't want to be considered to be yesterday's people. Imagine there are a lot of people that might have been become part of a Moav value society because they wanted to be prominent in Moav. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a Mochama of Hashkafas, where there were Misyavnim that said, not because I want to be Greek so I can get a better job, or I want to be Greek because I then can have international relationships, or that I could be more accepted amongst the Goyim in any one way or another. There were plenty of Jews who felt that their heritage simply does not hold a candle, if you pardon the pun, on Hanukkah, does not hold a candle to the glory of what is the Greek heritage. And maybe one of the biggest rayas is that they are in the ascendant. They are the modern view. They have been accepted by the vast majority of people wherever they go. And they have overcome all of the intellectual obstacles of the societies that finally succumb to them. In other words, isn't the biggest raya that an idea is correct, that everybody had a previous idea, and then they rejected that idea in favor of Hellenism? So when you start thinking along those lines, you begin to think that you are not only the ma'at mikol ha'amim, but that you are actually wrong because you are the ma'at mikol ha'amim. Like Ma'echa Taisa, who says that any of your values are correct? So you see, it's not just feminism, by the way. It's not just a question of misogyny. It's a question of the whole role of the Jew in the world. You know, there's no such thing as a Yiddishkeit that does not say that the Jew is inherently important. I don't like to use the word superior because I'm not sure what that means exactly. But that the Jew is inherently important. He's the yeast of the world. In other words, there's a programmatic agenda of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that programmatic agenda absolutely requires Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, absolutely requires Matan Torah, absolutely requires the statement, Ba'atem tiyu li'imam leches go'anim, ko'anim v'goy kodosh. And without that statement, without that absolute conviction, then which the Jew is losing left and right, the moment he becomes secular, the moment he becomes modern, it's usur to say that you are superior. It's also usur to say that you're the chosen people. Even if the chosen people are chosen to suffer, it's usur to say, because no one is chosen. In other words, you can say as much as you want, you can justify what you're saying by saying it's not such a big deal to be chosen for the gas chambers. You know, like a lot of Christians, Christian theologians after the Holocaust, they said, you know, you are the Agnus Dei, you know, you're the sheep that's being led to the slaughter because you're the carbon for the world. You know, he took a Jewish idea of Tzadik Nitfas Ba'avon Ador, and they say, you know, well, that's the Tzara. The Jews are so special that they're special for the gas chamber. So, you know, we don't have to buy into that. But the point is that you can't say a Jew is special for any reason today. And you're going to be looked down upon. Even the idea that has been so, you know, watered down to the point of almost not existing, that takes Aleinu L'Shabeach and says that we are the Am HaNivchar, for what purpose? It's only one purpose, Or L'Agoyim, to be the light of monotheism, to be the light of liberalism, to be the light of democracy. Even that is being challenged today. In other words, don't make yourself such a big shot that you're superior to me and that you know what democracy is all about and I don't. So the bottom line is that we are in the midst of one huge Matovo Alecha America, Matovo Alecha liberalism, Matovo Alecha the new way of looking at things, the new atheism, the new rejection and denial of the Jew being of any significance to anybody any more than the Hottentot or the Watusi, or the American Indian, or anybody else that either was or will be on the face of this earth. And that's why I think we have a very strong, whether we realize it or not, a very strong sense of kinship with the Maccabim, because that's exactly what was going on at the time. There was this huge wave of influence in Hashpah which made tremendous inroads, and on some level had some measure of legitimacy. There's no way otherwise of explaining how Chazal tolerated Yef Yefusa Shel Yefes Ba'alei Shem. And I'm not from the historians that say, well, you know, whether you like it or not, what they did, the rabbis, is that they incorporated B'di'eved, what for them was either you join them or you quit. And they weren't ready to quit, so they had a syncretic acceptance of a Sefer Torah that's written in Greek. Only Greek, not any other language, because no other language mattered. But, you know, that's a very, very mercenary perspective of history, and I don't believe it for a second. Because the same people are willing to be Meisa Nefesh, that they're going to fire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they didn't have to legislate something simply because it, by default, it was already happening. And they just made a religious value out of it, so it shouldn't be a contradiction to Yiddishkeit or to Klal Yisrael. So that is the ultimate nekuda here. The basic Yisoid HaDavar is that when you have a cultural clash, that is the symbolism or the significance of Matovo Alecha Moav. This is the extraordinary medrash that is buried, you know, somewhere at the beginning of Dvarim Rabbah, that has, to me, is speaking entire volumes in connection to this. That's the first point that I wanted to embellish, which I didn't have a chance to do. The second akuda is how this all relates to us in terms of the koach of the Chashmonoim to go against the Zerem. And I didn't even have a chance to quote the pasuk that I wanted to quote, which is a pasuk in Koheles. It's a very, very fascinating pasuk. Perek Tes Pasuk Yud in Koheles. Kol asher timtza yadcha la'asos b'kochacha aseh. Kol asher timtza, whatever you find, yadcha, your hand will find, because yad is nekeva. Kol asher timtza yadcha, that which your hand will find, right? Then it adds the word b'kochacha la'asos b'kochacha aseh. Whatever your hand finds the ability to do, do it b'kol chacha. That's one way of translating the pasuk. Very interesting that it's a pasuk that lends itself to many interpretations.
Is it Koheles?
Koheles perek tes pasuk yud. Ki ein ma'ase v'cheshbon v'das v'chochma b'sho'ol asher ato holech shama. So the very first thing is that this pasuk was perceived, this pasuk was understood as something that was a threat to Yiddishkeit, a statement of the Yetzer Hara. In other words, there was Bikshu Chachamim Lignos a Sefer Koheles, and for a variety of reasons, and this could have been one of them, because the pasuk seems to be saying, enjoy life as much as you can, and while you still have the koyach to do it, because if you die, you're not going to have any Hanoah anymore. So have the Hanoah now. That is the interpretation of the pasuk that says basically as follows. Whatever your hand can do, well, your hand can do a lot of things, including stealing, including hurting people, including enjoying life, including eating sufganiyot. You know, your hand can do a lot of things. But what is it that you should do? The answer is the sky is the limit. There's nothing that could stop you. B'kol chacho aseh. Whatever is b'kol chacho. B'kol chacho aseh. So when it says b'kol chacho aseh, it's really a very negative statement. Do it while you're still young. Do it while you still have your hand is able to reach out and strike somebody, take advantage of somebody, enjoy life, you know, buck the trend, violate the halacha. Do it. Because when you die, there's nothing. You're just dust. So you might as well enjoy it. So first of all, when you die, there's dust. There's all, you know, ein ma'aseh v'cheshbon v'das v'chochom v'bishol ashata holech shama. Who even speaks about Gan Eden and Gehenim? Maybe there's not even a discussion here of Gan Eden Gehenim. Maybe it's just Sheol, and who knows what Sheol is? Then, of course, there's the correction. L'ma'aseh, they did accept Koheles, and obviously they didn't understand the pasuk that way. So how did they understand the pasuk? So the answer is, they understood the pasuk that hayom la'asosam, v'lo l'mocha la'asosam. In other words, the idea is that the olam haba, with all of its positives, has one huge chesaron. You can't do anything for yourself in olam haba. There's no sustainability. There's no ability to rise from level to level based on what you do in olam haba, because there's nothing to do in olam haba. Kivan shemeis chofshi min ha-mitzvos. And the idea of going mi chayil ol chayil from madrega to madrega is something that is only conceivable if it's connected to what's going on here on earth. Either that the yoshim or the talmidim do mitzvahs and zchuyos and it's given as credit to you, and therefore it accrues to a higher level because the credits are happening now, 50 years, 1,000 years after the person's p'tira, because he left Talmidim, he left Torah, he left mitzvahs, he left chesed, and that was perpetuated by a Karen or by his svarim or by Talmidim that hear the shiurim, etc., etc., or by children who do the mitzvahs, and the mitzvahs are also, as someone once said, packages that are sent to Shamayim. Like you send packages to your kid in camp or to somebody from a foreign country who needs your help. So that is the only thing that you can do. So that's why kol asher timtza yadcha la'asos b'kochacha aseh means here and now, because ki ein ma'aseh cheshbon chochma b'shol ato sheholech shama. But I wanted to dwell upon the idea of b'kochacha aseh. So the way we learned it just now is while you are still Bekol Chacha, meaning it's the flip side of the first pshat. That is wrong. That is not accepted. That Kohelis is actually encouraging you to enjoy life at all costs. Rather, it says Lehefech, do mitzvahs and ma'isim toivim, because this is the only place for mitzvahs and ma'isim toivim to be done. But I wanted to emphasize, what does Bekol Chacha say? So it says, while you still have Kolach. But I wanted to say the pshat is different. Bekol Chacha say means, put your all into it. In other words, this pasuk is telling you not only that this is the only place to do it, but that you should do it with zeal, with alacrity, with enthusiasm, with energy, with excitement. Bekol Chacha, I say, do it Bekol Chacha. That's how I'm reading it. Do it Bekol Chacha. Do it in a way. Do it in a way that shows that it's important to you, yes, but it's much more than that. Because the way a person puts energy into something, that's what creates it. Energy is like the way that something is formed. You know, we view of energy here, the view of Bekol Chacha is in the final product. It's like, you know, if you're an artist and you don't have certain paint at your disposal, it's not going to look the way it should. The Bekol Chacha are those paints. The what you put into something isn't just that it happens faster. It's different. It's an entirely different cheftza. So the mitzvahs are different. The accomplishments are different, and the consequences, by the way, are not always reasonable, logical, or at the very least, they're not always able to be anticipated. But it's in the nature of doing great things, of doing things larger than life, that the consequences are unexpectedly and incrementally superior. So I have this beautiful story that I wanted to share with the Olam. There was a fellow in a yeshiva. I'm not going to mention the city or the names of the people, except names are changed for whatever reason. And it really doesn't matter, because it's more of a paradigm than anything else. Because if something happens only once, it doesn't really prove anything. But I think it's a paradigm. So what happened was, there was a certain yeshiva, and it was a yeshiva bacher, the yeshiva out of town. And the yeshiva bacher was asked, as were many of the other talmidim, who by and large were very charedi, to try to be makariv some of the day school kids and the kids that are in public school in that town. And they set up a program, and it fell upon this particular talmid, we'll call him Yitzchak, that he should take care of this bacher, this kid, pre-bar mitzvah, whose name was Mendy. So Mendy's a very nice boy, and he's a bright boy, and it was very nice for Yitzchak to take care of him and to get involved with him. And of course now it's coming closer to the bar mitzvah, and they learn the halachas in the kitzur Shulchan Aruch or whatever. And what about tefillin? So he says, my father got me a pair of tefillin. His father was totally not religious. So what kind of pair of tefillin did he get for him, and how did he know what to get and where to get? So he says, you know what, bring it in tomorrow, we'll take a look at it. So he brought in the tefillin, and right away he saw that the tefillin were not really tefillin. I mean, there was no shiloh that he's not mekayim the mitzvah. Maybe it was an old pair. I didn't hear from him precisely what the chesaron was. Maybe it was a pair that the bottom were worn out, or he knew that the parishes inside were no good. I'm not sure how he knew that the tefillin were not beseder, but that he was totally convinced. Now, just as an aside, in order to sustain himself and to have a little extra pocket money, he was very diligent, a very capable fellow. So in the Bein HaZmanim Tkufa, he learned how to, which is an interesting thing, how to tie Hoshanis, you know, that you have to have the five Aravas together, so they're usually tied with one of these strips of Lulav. So he was extremely capable of doing that in seconds. He was very fast. So they used to pay him whatever it was, a quarter a piece, 50 cents a piece, I don't know, to do that. And he did it so fast that he made a lot of money. So he had put together like over $1,000, and he was very, very happy that he had some pocket money for the year. Anyhow, now he has a problem, because his father is not interested in getting him a second pair of tefillin, and there's nothing you can do to argue about the union, because he really couldn't care less if he's going to wear tefillin or not. His father didn't wear tefillin himself. So he decided, you know what, I'm going to buy him a pair of tefillin of my own money. So he didn't know precisely what is a good pair of tefillin? He's just a young yeshiva bacher. He never had the experience of buying a pair of tefillin or researching it. He took one of the older kollel members who was knowledgeable, and he says, well, the only place we can, this is out of town, so the only place is the Lower East Side of Manhattan, because that way it was the tefillin center, the Safra center of the world, other than Eretz Yisrael, and that's where people went to buy tefillin. So they made the trip into New York, and they went to the Lower East Side, and they went to this Choshev Rav Sofer, and he said, well, you have a choice. What's the choice? He says, you can get dakas. The batim could be made of sheepskin type of leather, or it could be made of gasos of cows. And what's the difference in the price? He says, yeah, there's a difference. The in those days, it's amazing that those numbers, but you're talking about a very long time ago, maybe 30, 40 years ago. So he says, well, it's like this. The dakos are $185, and the gasos are $225. So do the math, it's a difference of $40. This guy's a kid, and he's buying it for a kid, and he needs the money. And the tefillin, he asks him, the dakas are kosher? He says, 100% kosher. So what is it? He says, well, listen, this is more mahuder. He didn't go into the details, but he says, this is more mahuder. So he's going like this in his mind. Dakas, gasas. Dakas, gasas. Dakas, gasas. But maybe I should buy him the dakas. Maybe I should buy him the gasas. Mahuder. He's going to probably wear it only once. What's the point? Dakas. I'm already going out of my way. I'm already in Manhattan. I already spent the whole day on this. He bought him the gasas. And he comes home with the gasas. The boy is very excited. He bought him a pair of tefillin. The father was very happy. Listen, it doesn't cost him anything. He doesn't mind. He gave him a big yashikayach. Father was, he says, this father was 6'5", and he came along with a dog that was almost as tall as he was. Anyhow, you understand the whole picture, you know, from this. Bekitzer, that was it. And then, you know, he spent a little more time with him, and then he ended up leaving the yeshiva to go to Eretz Yisrael, wherever he went, and they pretty much lost contact with this boy. And the boy, the last he heard, the boy had gone off to Ramaz for high school. So from that town where he was a native, he went to Manhattan for high school, probably dormed somewhere, and he went to Ramaz for high school. So many years later, he has a daughter, this young Talmud Chacham, Yitzchak. Yitzchak has a daughter, and the daughter is going on a birthright trip to Eretz Yisrael. So she calls him up once from Eretz Yisrael, and she says, you know, there's a fellow here by the name of Mendy, and he says that he knows you, you know, after I introduced myself to him. So he got very nervous. What do you mean? There are boys with you? I mean, this is what's going on over here? Wasn't this supposed to be a religious trip, you know, because they have different, you know, sections and so whatever? She says, yeah, very religious. He's my madrich. He's the mentor of the program. He wears his tzitzis out, and, you know, he's like, no, he's describing a real yeshiva bacher. So he says, find out what his last name is. And she checks again, and she comes back, indeed, that is the fellow. Anyhow, to make a long story short, he came back to his hometown, married a very, very wealthy young lady. I don't know if she was wealthy, but she's very capable, and she became a vice president in a major corporation. He doesn't have to worry about any money. And he basically sits the whole day doing chesed for the community. He's the one number one makarev on 7 different levels of his whole hometown. And he's built a beautiful family, has 4 children, each one is going to yeshiva, and so on and so forth. So he was telling me this, Yitzchak. He says, is there any way for me to know that there's any correlation, that the fact that he had the gasas instead of the dakas led him on this path? Of course not. But he has this nagging feeling that bashamayim, they saw that, you know, you want to do this? Let's make sure that it's not just for one day. So, but for me, that was his interpretation of the story. But for me, what was important here was something else. For me, it describes the bekoichacha, you know, that going the extra mile. So, this same Yitzchak has another story, which is much more recent and much shorter. He goes to buy cholent Thursday night in one of the eateries in our neighborhood. And he brings it home. No, it's for Shabbos. But what he does is it's cholent that they have already made. But he uses that and integrates it with his wife's cholent, and it's very, very nice. So, but he buys it on Thursday night. That's when they sell it. You know, Friday is hard to go anywhere Friday. Friday's too short. Friday's too busy. They may not even be selling cholent on Friday. They may not even be open for all I know. Anyhow, so he goes Thursday night. Outside of that store, there's a young fellow, must be in his late 20s, with his hand held out for tzedakah, and he says, tzedakah, tzedakah. And every time he's been giving him a dollar. So it's cold, and he's going in to buy cholent, and he sees this guy, gives him a dollar, and he says, you know what? I'm going to buy another pound of cholent. How much is it? $7 plus tax, whatever. Boy buys a second bag of cholent, you know, a container of cholent, puts it in a bag, put it in a separate bag. He goes out and he says, you like cholent? I says, I love cholent. He says, you know what? Here's some cholent. The guy didn't know what hit him. So I'm asking this Yitzchak to interpret for me, how does he understand what he did? And apparently from then on, that's his minhag. This was a year ago, whatever, but that's his minhag. Gives him a bag of cholent every Thursday night, besides the dollar. I asked him, how do you interpret this? He says, to me it's very simple. When you give a fellow a dollar, you're putting it into a pushka. When you give him the cholent, you created a human being. Because you tell him, I, Yitzchak, who just gave you a dollar, acknowledge that you're a real person. And I told him, that is exactly what I wanted to hear. That's exactly what I expected. And this really, that's the Bekoichacha. So what I thought was, the first story says, Bekoichacha says, don't be mitzumtzum in your thinking. Don't become narrow. People have a tendency that they challenge themselves and they ask themselves the question, am I really on a madrega to be that good? Am I really on a madrega to be that committed? Am I really on a madrega to sustain the idea that I have right now in my head? Because I don't want to be a hypocrite, and I also don't want to be somebody that it's here today and gone tomorrow, because then I'll just have regrets, you know, that I fell from a madrega that I really wasn't on to begin with. So why should I even try? Why make believe? That's what Bekol Chacho says to a person, is that first you have to know what Bekol Chacho is. And as far as I personally am concerned, Bekol Chacho borders on the infinite. It borders on the infinite in terms of capacity. I think that people are able to do things that they never would have dreamed of because they decided not to try for the very reasons that they are not going to do it. It's going to corroborate that they couldn't do it. But that's exactly the point, that they really could have. And if they would have tried and prevailed, then they would have proven the lie to what they finally did come to a maskana, that I can do it, and in Mimela it's not for me. And that applies to everything. It applies to giving tzedakah, it applies to doing chesed, it applies to buying what kind of tefillin, it also applies to whether you're going to become a Talmid Chacham or not. That people say, that, you know, I see the real Talmid Chacham, I know what they've accomplished, I know where they're holding right now. And that's not me. So then that means this is not for me. And if this is not for me, then I'm not going to do it, because I'm not going to spin my wheels. I'm not going to waste my koichus. I'm not going to waste my time. And I'm not going to be miyuash in the end. I refuse to be miyuash. I refuse to be thrown to the wolves because I'm just not up to par after trying so hard. So I'm not going to try. So the Bekochacha is something that the Yetzer Hara doesn't want to know about, because he says, you can't do this. But then there's the other aspect, and that's what I draw from that story about the oni with the cholent. There is in the person a fear of being involved. There's a fear of the other. There's a fear of, where is this taking me? Like almost like there's a Pandora's box of mitzvahs, a Pandora's box of chesed, a Pandora's box of tzedakah. Because if I can do this, then why can't I do it for 10 people or for 100 people? If I give 100, why can't I give 1,000? And in general, if this is so successful, why shouldn't I devote my life to it? So the all of a sudden, the fear of a lack of proportionality, of a lack of just, you know, it's mitzamsim a person all over again for entirely different reasons. Not because I can do it, but because it's going to take over my life. And that's also, and then there's a third thing of Bekol Chacha, which I thought about a lot. And I realized that when the Rambam says, which is a Rambam that I quote, especially in the last few years, over and over again. So at the end of Hilchos Chirus, the Rambam says that a person who works for a boss has to work Bechol Kocho. And he quotes Yaakov HaTzadik, that he said to his wives, to Rachel and to Leah, Ki Bechol Koichi Avadati Es Avichem. And this idea of working Bekol Koichai, so, you know, they came out with a book, Rakoma Shane, about her father, that it's called All for the Boss. A very, very popular book. It captured people's imagination. All for the Boss. It means all for the boss upstairs, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, this Rabbi Herman was a businessman. He was in the fur business. He had his ups and his downs. Most of the time he was successful. And he was an unbelievable Baal Tzedakah v'Chesed. And at any given moment at his table, there were 20 or 30 or 40 aniyim. And to such an extent, I think that the book doesn't talk about much about the mother. So somebody asked me, what about the mother? She must have been a very big tzedekah. So I said, she was a very big tzedekah, but she has nothing to write about her because she was in the chicken 24 hours a day. In the kitchen, I mean, 24 hours a day, cleaning the chickens and cooking them. So there's not much to write. Somebody once asked me, you know, how come, later there was, but how come, you know, nobody's writing a sefer about Rav Eliashiv and his life? So I said, because page one, Rav Eliashiv learned the whole day. Page two, Rav Eliashiv learned the whole day. Page three, you get the point? So we can't write a sefer. You'd be surprised, because you see how many sefarim are coming out now. But the point is that you can't write about her, because she was the ultimate tzaddikah. She completely was mevatel herself, and she gave that all that she had, her bekol chacha, into flicking chickens' feathers, and then, you know, cleaning them and cooking them up. But all for the boss. So I was thinking to myself, if there's a boss, then our obligation is also b'chol koichai, from that same Rambam Hilchos Chirus. So we work for that boss. So our obligation is to be b'chol koichai. So that's b'chol koichai. Because there's an obligation of b'chol koichai. Kol ma she'intimtza yodcha la'asos, anything that you have the capacity to do, you can never do it half-baked. You can never do it 90%. You have to do it 100%. Because what you do for Hashem, you have to do 100%. So that was one of the points that I wanted to add, which obviously it took us another 20-25 minutes. Obviously, didn't have the time to do that.